The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this afternoon is John Landwehr, Vice President and Public CTO for a company called Adobe. Good afternoon, young man. How are you?
Good afternoon. Great.
Right before the show, we were talking about when Adobe got started, 1982. Wow, that's kind of wild. They've kind of been around a while, haven't they? Most people know them consumer things, but they're kind of a big company.
A lot of changes in the industry, yes.
Yeah, and as we were doing a little preparation before we went on the air here, I'm looking at my monitor. I'm using Adobe Audition as we're on the studio here. So it's almost like it's everywhere present. And you go, oh yeah, well that's the Adobe PDF I've been using for 20 years. It's kind of a very well-known company, well-known product. We're not going to talk about consumer products today. I think we're going to talk about data security and insider threats, especially as it relates to the federal audience. And I'd like to talk about Adobe Audition and the strength. And all the engineers love this, by the way. So it's a really nice tool to use. But we're not going to talk about radio or personal technology. Talk about govies, federal information protection. But before we begin, we got to get you some credibility here, big guy. Went to your LinkedIn page, and I scratched my head going, wow, this guy's a CISSP, and he's got a handful of patents. I mean, that's remarkable, isn't it? Tell us more about your patents and your background.
Sure. I've spent over a dozen years now at Adobe, was out in the Silicon Valley for 17 years, and now enjoy living and working in the DC area, and have a background working a lot with electronic documents, digital signatures, encryption, and have spent some time working on patents tied to how organizations can better protect their electronic documents.
The electronic documents, that's interesting. Back in the 80s and 90s, when I was taking my tests to be secure, you know, those tests you had to take and sit in a room and pay the money and get the certifications after your name. They talked about firewalls. They talked about security. And the silly phrase was hard on the outside, soft on the inside. And I said, well, that may have worked in the 90s and maybe the OOs or whatever they're called 10 years ago. But there's a shift right now. And even if you fire up LinkedIn, you see what's going on, what current conversations are taking place, even up the road here at the DHS, they're saying, you know, there is a shift from perimeter defense to data protection. Data protection means you. That means you and your documents. And that's what you handle.
Correct. And I think there's been a big shift now as organizations have already invested in the perimeter, but yet accidents, insiders, and attacks are still happening on the sensitive information that is contained within the perimeter.
And that's what's it. Let's say you have an agency that you go through the checkbox, you're doing a continuous monitoring, everything's fine. Things can still happen. You have to take it to the next level. And I think that's what the people at DHS are saying, is that, okay, fine, we made agency A, we're doing real good, this checklist, you're fine, you got an A+ in all your reviews, and bad things happen. So we have to take up to a different type of level. And this is looking at the documents themselves.
Correct. There's a lot of sensitive information contained in electronic documents, whether it's personally identifiable information or healthcare information or other government sensitive information. And that information's in a variety of formats. And of course, it needs to be protected so that only the authorized people can view it. And you'd like some sort of protection that if that content should accidentally or intentionally leave an organization, it remains protected and cannot be viewed.
I'll be speaking at the Ron Reagan Center next month, doing all-day master ceremonies. And, you know, when I pull in there, they look at my trunk, they check my ID, and I kind of like it. I mean, no bad guys are going to get in. It's kind of safe. And so that's the obvious perimeter defense. That's the physical perimeter defense. That's what you learn in security. And then there's the network defense. And the shift is towards documents. And what people have been doing is that the govies who listen to this, the people ask surveys. In fact, Federal News Radio has done a survey of our listeners and said, well, what do you think about insider threat? What do you think about data security? What do you think about your personal information that you had to give the agency in order to get the job there? And I'll just quote the study, and I'm kind of, you know, looking inward here, but you can go to federalnewsradio.com and type in insider threat and you can get the study. And 2,230 people responded, and that only 2% were very confident in their agencies protecting their data. So that's not a shining number, is it, John?
Well, there's certainly been a lot of stories in the news about information being inappropriately accessed, whether it's internally or externally. And again, I think it goes to an opportunity for this year's budgets to shift their thinking toward that investment inside the perimeter. And perhaps one way to look at how best to deploy technology is make an assumption that the bad guys are already in. You may not know who the bad guys are. You may not know if they're employees or contractors or partners or people that have broken in over the network. But if you've got that mindset that, okay, if I'm assuming the bad guys are already in, how am I going to protect that information differently? And if you look back in the physical world, you can see how that threat has been addressed because it's no longer just one lock on the front door of most office buildings. You now have locks on offices, you have locks on file cabinets, and that's all been in an approach to bring security closer to the most sensitive information and only give the appropriate keys to the people that should have access. And I think there's an opportunity to do a similar thing now in the digital world, bringing security as close as possible to that sensitive information, perhaps at the content, the document level.
I go to events all the time. Tuesday night, I was at an event with 200 people. I was talking to a lot of my Govy buddies, their project managers, and they always beat themselves up. Oh, woe is me, and this agency, that agency, it only happened. No. This happens in the commercial world as well. Earlier, 5 minutes ago, I talked about LinkedIn. Guess what? 2012, LinkedIn was breached, and they had problems too. So don't, you know, cry yourself to sleep saying, oh, woe is me. It's just me at Doy Interior. Is that me over at the Treasury? No, it's happening to everybody. It's happening to banks. And think about the banks have. What the banks can do is they can kind of cover up some of these things. Agencies, it's right there on the front page of the Washington Post, isn't it?
Anywhere there's sensitive information is where the bad guys are going to look, whether it's in the government, whether it's in the commercial world. And again, it goes back to that sensitive information. It's PII, it's PHI, it's the ability to go in and steal something important. And that's why, again, approaches need to be looked at for how to better protect that across all these organizations to better protect its employees and also us as citizens.
What is, as a software developer say, what is a use case? Tell me a story. Agency A, what's a typical incident?
Well, you could look at a lot of information that's stored in electronic forms. Of course, Adobe's been doing PDF forms for a very long time. So we have a lot of customers that gather information from citizens or consumers that contains PII or PHI or financial information. So an organization typically might store that form in a content management system. But of course, if somebody's able to break into that content management system by perhaps compromising somebody's weak password or credential, now they have everything in that virtual file cabinet. And that's where we see an opportunity to strengthen that use case by now encrypting the information at the form layer. So even after that form leaves the virtual file cabinet, everywhere it goes, a check is done to say, who wants to access this document? And you authenticate them. And then an authorization check to say, okay, I know this user, but do they have a need to know what's in here? That way, if the information is accidentally or intentionally taken out of that repository and sent somewhere it shouldn't, even if they get the file, they can't open it.
And that is almost a true definition of moving from the perimeter to the data itself. And so it's almost saying, well, we're going to open up our front door. You ain't gonna, you know, you're not going to get this anyway because it's locked in a case inside the house. And so you want to have your door locked, maybe even an alarm. I have an alarm in my house, and you have some kind of a vault inside. And that's what it is. It's creating a small, like a mini vault for the information that's so important.
Exactly. That sticks with the document. And I think the other challenge that many organizations face is they don't have just one front door anymore. That networks have gotten so complicated. And now with all the mobile devices that are out there, these devices are running around inside and outside the front door. So organizations want a way to protect that information anywhere it goes, even after it leaves your front door and is now running around on smartphones and tablets. And should one of those devices be stolen or left behind an airline seat pocket, they want to make sure that all the sensitive information that might be on there remains protected.
And it is running around because many people are using smartphones now with apps that tell them how far they've walked or run. And so it's not a stretch to say they're running around with smartphones and creating data and information. Let's take a little break and come back. We'll talk more about insider threat versus outsider threat. I mean, what have we seen the last four or five incidents? Are there trends we've seen? Are there trends in the federal government? How do they contrast with trends in the commercial world as far as insider threats and data security? You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this afternoon is John Landwehr, Vice President and Public Sector CTO for Adobe. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Jan Landwehr, Vice President, Public Sector, CTO for Adobe. And we're talking about data security and insider threats. And I'll bounce back to some software. I'm always arguing with software developers all the time. I'm on conference calls talking to people in India and going to project manager and PMI meetings and whatnot. And they talk about the software development life cycle. And this is what happens at the life of a piece of software. And early in the show, we talked about maybe it's more of a document development life. So project managers should know about this, shouldn't they?
Well, and I think looking at the software development life cycle, security is becoming more and more important, both for the developers and then also the transition into system administrators to persistently manage and protect the applications once they've been deployed. I think investments in training for developers, for system administrators in the area of security continues to be important. I think also, of course, end user training is a hot topic that is another great investment. But as organizations are doing that training, I think some of the architectural shifts that we're looking at from a movement inside the perimeter are really how do you better authenticate people that are using electronic systems, and how do you make sure that only those people that need to have access to certain information do, and how do you incorporate things like encryption deeper into the application development, again, to persistently protect that information anywhere it goes, independent of storage, independent of transport.
Earlier, we talked about LinkedIn. I was on LinkedIn this morning, and they asked me to have set up two-factor authentication. Last night, I was on Facebook, you know, seeing what my sister was doing. She's getting on a plane tomorrow morning, and they asked for two-factor authentication. Well, it seems like you might as well take advantage of it, huh?
We need to move away from passwords. It's far too easy for people to use the same password in multiple applications or have passwords that aren't strong enough with the upper, lower, number, symbol capabilities that go along with it. And I think that's really an opportunity where technology advances in smart cards, chip cards, what's rolled out with HSPD 12 in PIV in the federal government, what's starting to roll out with EMV in credit cards, and even advances in biometrics that we're starting to see on mobile devices. One of the ways that we use multi-factor authentication in our organization is that when I go to log on to something sensitive like our HR application, I go to the login screen, start my login process, and then my phone beeps. And then, of course, I authenticate with my finger to wake up the phone. And then there's a prompt that shows up based on that push notification saying, John Landwehr is trying to access this application, approve or reject. And that's multi-factor at multiple levels because it notifies my phone, which is something I have. That phone is then authenticated with something about me, which is my fingerprint, and that's remotely authenticating then this application that's sitting in a web browser on my desktop. So we see that as a great advance in not only security, but also ease of use. Because if you implement security in such a way that it interferes with the user experience, people won't use it or won't use it correctly. And I think another area that we're starting to see great advances back to the smart cards are with these federal government employee badges and contractor badges that people have. It's great for security, but also ease of use, because instead of a 16-character upper, lower, number, symbol, password I have to change every month, I sit down at a workstation and I insert my badge into the computer and type in a PIN code, just like you would with an ATM machine. It's kind of interesting because ATMs have always had this multi-factor authentication since back in the 80s, right? You never walk up to an ATM and just type in a username and password, because that wouldn't be secure enough.
I'd like that. Get some free money.
So I think that's where this really approach of multi-factor authentication is starting to take hold. And we as consumers and citizens and employees have an opportunity to embrace it.
You know, when I close my eyes and I just repeat the word insider, I think of Snowden. That's the first image. The first visual image is a guy named Snowden. And he was a contractor, wasn't he? And so inside, outside, so is insider a contractor or an employee? Or what's current thinking on insider threats versus contractors? Or I kind of meld them all together. I don't know. I mean, close your eyes, I think of Snowden. I mean, sitting somewhere, I don't know, in Sweden, wherever he's at. But what about contractors?
Well, I think it's tricky because when incidents happen, it's very often difficult to determine whether that was an employee or a contractor based on their login, or whether their login had been compromised. For example, if they had a password that was too easy to guess, and somebody then from the outside is using their username and password to get to that information. So that's often one of the first things an organization needs to do, is when they see a particular username accessed with an event, you know, do they know it was actually that named person, or was it somebody that had compromised that account? And that can often take organizations a while to figure out, whether it's, potentially another coworker that's compromised an account, or potentially somebody from the outside that has compromised an account and then been able to get inside the perimeter, inside the network, masquerading as another user, and then running around and having, you know, full privileges just as if they were that person.
Last week, they celebrated the anniversary of Back to the Future. It was Back to the Future Day last week. And it's all silly to look back on 30 years ago and 30 years from now. And when I had Vince Cerf in the studio here, I said, well, when you first designed all this internet stuff, did you ever think about security? He said, oh, yeah. The problem is that, back in 1995 and 2005, what you thought the threat was going to be, it's not even conceptual. I mean, I never thought of hoverboards, and people never thought of smartphones either, did they? And I think that the problem is that this threat is changing so quickly, is that we may have 5 or 6 new devices. Maybe you'll have your Google Glass here in the next 2 or 3 years, but that document's still going to remain the same. So if you focus on the document, you can be authenticated through a smartphone, through Google Glasses, through a hoverboard. So I don't know. I have no idea what that is going to be in 5 years. And I think that the focus has to be maybe moving away from that perimeter and the device and the hardware to the document itself.
Agreed. And I think a lot has changed since the internet was first created and was only tied to big hardware and monitors that were stuck in an office. And now as you have more internet of things that are being connected to smartphones, to tablets, to wearables, to cars, to other devices, information's flowing between them. And I think that that's also where encryption technology is fitting in. And we're seeing some different approaches to that, because it's no longer enough about just encrypting the pipe between point A and point B, or encrypting the storage on the device. Because once the content gets to the device, it again goes back to who's authenticating to it, what do they have authorization to, and could that content be accidentally or intentionally forwarded to somebody that shouldn't have access, whether it's within the same organization or even across the world. And that's where, as you mentioned, I think that the shift on moving security to the content layer, the document layer, the form layer, is shifting encryption now to that content. So every object, every asset of electronic information gets encrypted, and the keys are only handed out to people that have properly authenticated, ideally with multi-factor authentication, and are listed in an authorization system to review that HR information, to review that healthcare information, whatever it happens to be.
When it comes to encryption and keys, is there a variation within cloud storage and premises storage, or is the same rule apply?
Well, encryption can help a lot for cloud-based storage as well, because if an organization who is a customer of a cloud-based service encrypts the content at the content layer before it goes to the cloud, should somebody break into the cloud, that virtual file cabinet, all those assets are encrypted and so, can't be accessed.
So if an encrypted document sit in the cloud or sit in the server down the hall, still protected.
Protected from the administrators even of those servers, whether it's the on-prem virtual file cabinet or the cloud-based virtual file cabinet. Those administrators, those custodians of that information, even though they can see all the bits that are in their file cabinet, they're all encrypted.
And I think that's the debate right now, is if I put my stuff on popular cloud A, are the administrators going to be able to see my stuff? And I think this is a valid concern that many small businesses have, is I'll gladly put my customer list on to old Gunther Cloud Computing, but I don't want those guys at Gunther Cloud Computing to read my stuff. And you know they can. I mean, they've said they can, and because in order to comply with some federal regulations, you have to be able to. So it comes up with some different concepts here that people don't normally think about. Let's take a break, come back, talk more about human error, and about a survey that shows that sometimes people make accidents and bad things happen, and maybe ways to prevent some of those basic human problems from happening. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio. John Landwehr, Vice President, Public Sector, CTO for Adobe. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have John Landwehr. He is the Vice President and Public Sector CTO, a company called Adobe. We're not talking about PDFs or Adobe Audition here. We're talking today about data security insider threats. And right before the break, I kind of mentioned a study done by Federal Times, and they had a couple hundred federal IT managers they surveyed. And guess what? Human problem here. They talked about accidental leaks. I mean, let's face it, it happens. I mean, I got three kids. Stuff happens. Bad things happen. Cars get totaled. And so where does all this technology fit in as far as just basic human beings showing up for work and making mistakes?
Well, one of the ways that we often hear accidents happening is even when your email client is trying to be helpful and predict what person you want to send a message to based on the first few characters that you type in. And you type in John space and it picks a John out of your address book that you email a lot. And if you're moving fast in an organization, you may accidentally select the wrong John. Of course, information also may get posted to the wrong servers. Information gets accidentally lost on USB and removable media. So there's a variety of ways that accidents are happening as people have more and more electronic information that they can move around very quickly.
And then two-factor prevents a lot of this too. So all we can do is cross our fingers and...
Yep, combine that two-factor with encryption so that if something does accidentally get sent to the wrong person or intentionally gets forwarded to the wrong person, it's persistently protected independent of any subsequent storage or transport that takes place on the network.
Persistence, yeah, that's a term software developers like to use, a persistent state. You know, if I'm in the classroom, I talk to students, say, I'll read blogs. Is there a blog that the listeners can read that can keep up with some of these developments?
Absolutely. blogs.adobe.com/Adobe in Government is a great place to go for information on what Adobe's doing in this area.
So what is Adobe doing? What solution do you have for my listeners?
Well, it turns out we've been doing encryption for a very long time. It dates back to the second release of Acrobat in 1994. Then we started doing digital signatures in the fourth release of Acrobat back in 1999. But as organizations were looking to Adobe for electronic documents and electronic forms, we kept adding additional security capabilities through enterprise software that would tie into organizations' multi-factor authentication, tie into their content management systems to be able to persistently protect information independent of storage, independent of transport. And it really gives organizations both a combination of preventative and detective controls. So the preventative control is active, that if a piece of content goes someplace it shouldn't, even though the file shows up in your email or the file sitting there on your desktop, if you don't have a valid login credential and the system hasn't given you access, even though you have that file, it won't open. And then that detective control is able to look for unusual or suspicious activity that may be happening with your most sensitive documents internally.
If you'd like to listen to this on your smartphone or an iPod or maybe on your computer, you can go to iTunes and just type in Federal Tech Talk, Federal News Radio, and you can listen to John and talk about our discussion here. We're talking about data security. In the world of software development, you know, they talk about continuous improvement. And then the folks over at NIST stole that, and they talked about continuous monitoring for threats. And now this continuous monitoring is being applied to documents as well. It's like this one concept gets thrown out everywhere. So what is continuous monitoring when it applies to documents?
Expanding on that notion of being able to provide detective controls on sensitive information, advanced analytics can be used to then monitor how electronic information is being consumed. Who is going to the repository to request information? How is that information being consumed, and are there any unusual or suspicious patterns taking place? For instance, if a log file showed that somebody went in and downloaded 100 documents in 5 minutes and didn't actually open any of them on their desktop, that would sound suspicious, right? So this is an opportunity where that security analytics can look at the various log files in an organization and watch for the user behaviors to that content, and then see things happening real time that, wow, okay, you know, this person usually only accesses 20 sensitive documents a day, and here it was 200. Maybe we better go and stop by and make sure everything's okay, or look and see could their credentials have been compromised or something. So that's really where the analytics, the continuous monitoring, and the detective controls are able to persistently follow that most sensitive content.
And I keep thinking of a guard with a uniform on standing. No, what it is, it's more like on a nature trail, they'll have a camera that is a motion detector camera. And so the deer approaches it, takes a picture. And that's what this is too. It's like, it's not like a policeman standing there for 24 hours. It's like, okay, we got a file there. You go home, you can eat dinner, you can go to a baseball game. But when someone opens up that file, it's automatically going to detect and send you a note and go, hey, this guy Gilroy's opened this thing. And for the people who monitor this, they'd be informed. And so it's continuous monitoring has got to do more with, detection and then some way to transmit that information to the individual. I imagine that's a system that Adobe has.
Yes, we do. We provide enterprise rights management capabilities as part of our Adobe Experience Manager platform, which really helps organizations with their content management of documents, electronic forms. Anywhere that information goes, it gets persistently protected. Again, independent of storage, independent of transport, and especially across platforms. So as organizations have Mac and Windows desktops and iOS and Android phones and tablets, this is also a solution that when you put the security on the content, on the document, on the forms, whether it's Office documents or PDF files or CAD files, everywhere that file goes, it's protected. And should there be an accident, should there be a forward to somebody that shouldn't get it, or should there be a malicious user or somebody that's gotten inside the perimeter, compromised an account, sees all these files, every bit's encrypted. So if it does end up someplace it shouldn't, it won't open. And the security teams can be notified real time when that suspicious activity happens.
So is the application for this a blended system where if you have a part of your agency where you have 100 documents, 100,000 documents, do you split which ones could be protected, which one? Maybe the stuff with personal information and healthcare information protected, or all, or one, or how is this applied?
Well, I think for any organization, one of the most important places to start is to understand what your most sensitive information is. It often involves marking that content as being sensitive, and absolutely start first with the most sensitive content in any organization. Certainly, if you have information that is not sensitive or should absolutely be public, then you don't need to make the investments on protecting that information, and that gives you more time to protect only the most sensitive documents. So, you know, it's unlikely that every organization will have to protect every document. It goes back to knowing what's most important, knowing who should have access to it. How do you know who those people are? Ideally using multi-factor authentication, and then encrypting that content to protect it everywhere it goes.
So if you have a document sitting on your system and someone opens it up 100 times, downloads it 100 times, what you can do is you can say, well, something's going on, or someone's making a mistake or hitting the button too many times. So I guess this falls within the fancy pants word is predictive analytics. Whoa, that's going to impress somebody, you know. Not many of my listeners, but I guess that's what we're talking about, predictive analytics. This is what you're talking about here.
Being able to gather information from a number of sources real time, aggregate it, analyze it, and then determine, okay, this is not falling within the usual baselines of behavior for these users, is certainly able to then predict, oh, there could be something unusual going on here because the amount of sensitive documents going someplace that it's never gone before could be a very early prediction of having systems compromised, having insiders, or having continuous accidents that are going on that can certainly be addressed. And the faster that organizations can discover these incidents, the faster they can clean up and the faster they can improve their systems to prevent it from happening again.
Let's take a break. When we come back, talk more about insider threats, data security, touch more on this concept of encryption and really what it means, it doesn't mean. And there's, you know, when it gets to encryption, it can be a pretty deep topic. I think we're going to give some basic general points about what encryption is, what it isn't, and how that's changed over the last 15 or 20 years. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Jan Landwehr, Vice President, Public Sector, CTO for Adobe. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Jan Landwehr. He's Vice President, Public Sector, CTO for Adobe. We've been talking about insider threats and data security. And, you know, a lot of talk around here about encryption. And to tell you the truth, you know, I wasn't a math major. I work with a lot of physicists and math majors and aerospace engineers, and they're way smart. I mean, they walk by a whiteboard and they just start putting up formulas, and they're not intimidated by that. I think a lot of listeners are. And so from the perspective of a just a regular Joe, and by the way, the president of IBM has a degree in history, for a regular Joe Sixpack here, tell us about encryption and what Adobe does to make encryption good and easy for my listeners.
That easy part is important for encryption because there is a lot of very sophisticated math that goes on behind the scenes that is able to take information that is plain text and human readable and essentially scramble it so that it can't be viewed unless you have the corresponding key. And in a content management system, that virtual file cabinet that has enterprise rights management with it, it's able to manage the keys seamlessly so that when you go to double-click a document, whether it's a PDF file or an Office file, a server gets contacted to first say, well, who are you? And then it determines, well, do you need to have access to this file? If so, then the corresponding key is sent down to your device, decrypts that content so it's viewable on the screen. But one of the things that today's modern encryption implementations do is that that encryption sticks to the content. So if you make any changes and then hit the save button or save as or export, all of those bits then get re-encrypted and saved out to your device, whether you're then sending it over the network to an internal file share or sharing it up to a cloud. Everywhere that file goes, it's encrypted. And the difference with today's implementation of encryption versus the past is that, you know, encryption used to be just for protecting a network from point A to point B with SSL or VPNs and getting the padlock in the browser. Or encryption used to be protecting a zip file. And then once you used your key to open the zip, everything was unencrypted. And that's where it could be accidentally or intentionally forwarded on. This new notion of content-centric security with encryption, enterprise rights management, locks the encryption to the content. Again, everywhere those bits go, everywhere they're saved, locally on your device, over the network, to the cloud, they remain encrypted. And it all has to be done in a way, as you mentioned, that's easy to use and seamless so that if you double-click the file and you're an authorized user, it opens right up, I hit save, I keep doing business as usual, but I get the added assurances that everywhere that file goes, it's protected, and should it go somewhere it shouldn't, the bad guys can't read it.
That's pretty good, simple analysis of how encryption works. What I have done over the years is that many of the people talk to me about their radio show and this guest and that guest, and they'll say, well, that guy's talking about encryption. He's got a bunch of patents. Now, what kind of phone does he have? They don't care about your company, but he must be a smart guy. Now, what does he use for his phone? So I've come up with a scientific 10-question test to find out if, in fact, our card-carrying nerd. The first question is, do you have an Instagram account?
I do not have Instagram.
Okay. And how many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
Several. Both several. iOS and Android.
Well, that's the right nerd answer. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
Personal, no, but we use Adobe Gov as our Twitter feed.
And have you ever used Meerkat or Periscope?
No.
What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have both a iPhone 6S Plus and a Samsung Android Galaxy Note.
Righty and lefty. Now there's a good ball player there, both sides of the plate. And what's the most popular app on your iPhone you've had in the last 30 days?
Email.
Okay. So we break into your house tonight. How many tablets do we see floating around there in the kitchen, the living room, and all the places?
I recently did a count of Internet of Things devices inside our network for a family of four, and we have over 75.
No kidding. Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Thermostats.
Nest, yeah. Wow. That's
cameras, incredible. E-book readers.
Wow. When was your most recent post in social networking?
Yesterday.
Well, that's pretty good. And when's your Apple Watch due? Is it next week, or when did you put that on order?
I do not have a wearable watch at this point in time.
Okay. And the last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
Electronic.
Well, that's, you know, kind of good. You know, and it's an average score. It's not quite a nerdling, but it's not bad. I'm always interested in new applications and tablet devices, but IoT, you know, 75 devices. Maybe my new question should be is how many IoT-enabled devices, not devices. It could be anything. I guess a Nest is a device, yeah.
A Nest.
You have in the house, 75. Yes. I mean, who'd have thunk that 5 years ago? No one would have thought of that question. I mean, geez, that's really incredible.
And just when you think you're done counting those devices, there's one more device somewhere plugged in on the network, or Bluetooth devices, or cars now are updating over the internet as well. So the number of devices is definitely increasing.
Yeah, and encryption's everywhere. And I think encryption's got to be important for automobiles. I mean, you know, there's a story 3 or 4 months ago about cars being hacked. And this whole idea of hacking has got to be important for the federal government. Talk a little bit more about what Adobe sees the federal government going in the next 5 years in terms of hacking and in terms of protecting data.
Well, I think the first thing we're going to see is a better convergence of these devices, especially between smartphones, tablets, desktops, and laptops, when it comes to being able to work not only around the office, but remote and teleworking, and being able to better secure that content as it seamlessly travels across those devices inside and outside the network. I also think we're going to see as part of that growth, even going back to more applications on the desktop, and I may be going out on a limb here, but I think with the app stores now on the desktop platforms and users looking for a seamless experience of applications, not only in their smartphone and tablet, but getting that same application experience back on their laptop, or when their laptop becomes a, kind of a convertible keyboard tablet kind of device, I think we're going to start to see more applications outside the browser on the desktop, driven by the app stores, whether it's news, weather, sports, social, finance, or even enterprise apps. And a lot of that's from advances in the development tools that are making it easier to build these cross-platform applications. And then I hope that passwords will disappear.
Disappear. what do you want for Christmas? Passwords disappear. Me too. I'm heavily involved in the world of training. And I like getting up in front of human beings and do speaking and training and teaching. And I think this has got to be part of it. I mean, you got to have a staff there. You got to say, look, okay, you've read all this stuff, but let's just reinforce exactly what you're supposed to do in this situation. I think training's got to be part of this.
Agreed. And it certainly is important not only for organizations to train their employees and their contractors. I think we as citizens also have the opportunity to get occasional training on best practices for security, and then it even goes down to the schools so that the kids are learning better security and internet responsibility at an early age as more and more of their devices and their books and their watches are all becoming online and connected with their sensitive information. It's important for them to know how to best protect it.
One way to connect to Adobe is through Twitter, and it's at AdobeGov. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, you can follow me at Ray Gilray. I've been taking some pictures, and I'll write a blog about this interview. But I think it's a question that people have to ask. Instead of making sure that the firewall is secure and the guy isn't walking into the building, you have to maybe take it to the next level. And that's what's happening here. It's gone from no IoT devices at the house to someone like you with 75. And 5 years ago, you never thought of protecting not only the access to the network with the documents on the network itself. It's the next level of security. It has to be. Well, great. Thank you. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, John Landwehr, Vice President, Public Sector Chief Technology Officer at Adobe. Thanks, John.
Thank you. Great to see you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.